Hey guys, welcome to episode 122 of the JV Club with my guests, the Sklars. I've known the Sklars forever. They have always just, oh my gosh, they always include me in projects whenever they can, and they just make me laugh really hard. I guess I talk about that a lot during the episode, but really great guys. I've been on their podcast, the Sklarborough Country, and I just enjoy their company so much. So glad they were able to join me. I want to get some shout outs in. I want to thank AJ. I want to thank Amber for your emails. I want to thank David, Rachel, Allison, Mindy, Alexis, and Rick for your comments on Facebook. Also want to thank all the t-shirt orderers. I'm so excited. Boy, I might have to get some help getting this stuff shipped out. Suddenly I realize I'm a one-man band in many ways, although I do have beautiful Victoria and Jules helping me out from afar. But I got to get some hands-on help, I think. it's the best problem to have. I'm so excited that so many of you want t-shirts. I have received and hopefully have been in contact with almost all of you via the JV Club Facebook page. If you don't have a Facebook account, I think somebody tweeted me that they didn't. Feel free to also just email me at janet@janetvarney.com. That's janet@janetvarney.com. And I will get that email and I will also be able to hook you up from there. So thanks for that. I want to acknowledge Ted PJ as Demon Sydney from Howard's Nerdist page episode. And then I've been tweeting about this as well, but I do want to throw some support in for the beautiful Kula Vilesak, who is working on her documentary origin story. You can support her post-production phase by going to igg.me/AT/origin story doc. Now listen, I don't expect you to write down all of that. You can also just, I'm sure if you Google Kulop and origin story, or if you go on Twitter, you'll see that a lot of people are getting behind this project. So I know you'll be able to find it even if you didn't write down every word in backslash I just said. And then the last thing I feel, you know, listen, it's everybody's talking about it. Everybody's been talking about it. Of course, I can't not acknowledge that it's been a really weird couple of days for so many of us, I think, because of the death of Robin Williams. Obviously, now we've also lost Lauren Bacall, but that was a little bit of a different situation. But yeah, I don't know what to say other than that. You know, for those of us who have sort of touched a little bit of darkness in our lives emotionally, and there have been a lot of guests on the show who have, and I know that there are a lot of you who connect with that on some level, whether you've had a loved one who is in that position or you yourself have gone through it, or maybe you're going through it now. I just want to, you know, let you know that you're in a community of people where there's a solidarity and an understanding. And at no time will you ever hear me say that someone who takes their own life is selfish, and I can't get angry at that person. I really believe that it's the end game of a very real, very serious disease. And that we need to really be compassionate for, you know, the people who go through that, and also, of course, the families. Okay, boy, I'm sure you've been hearing that from a million different places, but it is something that's kind of affected me really deeply, maybe more deeply than I expected, and it's just something that's on my mind. So I wish you guys all the best. It's an opportunity for me to express my appreciation and love for the listeners, and I will talk to you soon. Okay.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
That I start my podcast with a loud sound of water being poured
into a glass.
It's very soothing.
That was it?
Yeah. It's a little bit like a rushing stream meets, am I drinking straight vodka? Neither.
Who pours vodka straight? Like, who's like, who's just like, if someone's like making a drink for me and I'm like, yeah, let's put some vodka here, and I hear the slightest gulp, I'm like, nope, I can't drink that.
If you're pouring that much vodka, you should be drinking it from the bottle, like the heathen that you are.
Mine as well. Just kind of wave it in the air and yell at people
or a
while
goddamn funnel.
That's right. Are you a lightweight, Rand?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like a good drink, but I just, you know, I never could get into, and I just, it bums me out, and I fear I may never. A part of me thinks that, like, maybe someday I will.
Yeah.
But, like, I envy the people who are like, I love a good scotch.
I know. Those people
sit
are everywhere.
Sit with the thing
here.
In the sky. It's like, but I'm then there are people like Patton Oswalt, who loves scotch for all the right, not because of how it makes him look.
Right.
Or how it, he's just like, I love it.
Yeah.
I love the idea. It's like, I imagine him drinking a scotch and then going to an old typewriter. typing out a classic bit.
Tightening
with like,
up his smoking jacket.
With like a flannel like throw over his legs.
Sure.
The way like, my legs don't work anymore. This scotch has made my legs not work anymore. Can't work.
I loved him in that random Alfred Hitchcock movie that we just described. Yeah. Yeah.
Legs Don't Work. You remember Legs Don't Work? I love Legs Don't Work. It was a sequel to A Room with a View.
Sure.
It's Legs Don't Work. It's that guy later in life.
You know what was weird is that they thought it was going to be a surprise when we found out the legs didn't work, but that was the title of the movie.
Yeah. Legs Don't Work.
Why were people so shocked?
People were surprised that they didn't see it coming.
It was a different time.
It was a different time, everyone.
Oh, my God. Guys, I've been looking forward to this. I've been looking forward to this.
We've given you so much grief about not being on your show that
even
is just all
it wasn't
you
inter- an option.
I know. I feel like we forced you into
you kind
this.
Kind of were a huge motivation, to be honest with you.
I wanted to come on and be like, so, ran out of women, huh?
Yeah,
finally here we are.
You know what?
Here
someone did say that almost seriously, and I was like, let's be just very clear on this.
Stop.
That's not going to happen. I'm not going to be like,
I did it. There's nobody left.
Yeah.
But there are dumbass people who think that.
No, for sure.
They're like, well, yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, how long is your podcast? Will you do a podcast where you just interview women? Yeah. It's going to be a fun year.
Oh, my God. Terrible.
Like, what?
I feel like I got like hints of that. But for the most part, luckily, I haven't had a lot. I mean, certainly, I don't think I've had anyone on the podcast. That would have been a horrible mistake to realize in the moment. Like, thanks for doing
the podcast.
Oh,
you're one of those. Yeah. You're proving everything that the haters are saying.
Exactly. No, but you guys know. I mean, I've known you for such a long time now. And boy, I don't know if anyone makes me giggly the way that you guys do. Like, when we were working on Back on Tops, I just felt like I was giggling every 5 seconds.
So great. I mean, let's just be honest. And you're not the type of person who – you're not a huge, like, I'm going to blow my own horn here, but toot my own horn.
Is it blow the horn or toot the horn?
I think it's blow my own.
I'm going to blow my own horn almost sounds like I brought a horn.
Or I'm going to blow myself. Like, literally, like, I'm going to give myself fellatio.
You're not one to toot. Right.
You're not one
to give yourself fellatio.
You're not one to toot your own vuvuzela, but
that's right.
You were so good, and it was one of those projects for us where we wrote it and then said we had these people in mind that we wanted to play certain things, and then you would write. Then once people were set, we would write to those people, which is really the best way to do a project.
Yeah, that does feel good because to have that voice in your head.
Mm-hmm. And just like, I trust this person that they'll be able to carry it off. And this is what we always said. We said, and I think we even said this to you and everybody, if you do it exactly the way it exists on the page, we'll be really happy. It'll be great. But whatever you bring to it otherwise will be even better.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. To me, it was a very freeing project in that way. I mean, I would love to make more of them.
Oh, my God. And people can still see it, yeah? Can they?
Yeah, you can go on YouTube.
Is it still on YouTube?
Sure. Back on Tops.
That's double P, guys, like the baseball cards.
Yeah.
What a joy and a pleasure. And also
– great people in it.
Great people in it.
Crazy great people in it.
Great people in it. Great people behind the scenes. Like every time I run into Neil Mahoney, I still – talk to him.
Neil Mahoney, who edited it and shot some of it. Mike Blyden, who's
an incredible director.
Peter Atencio, who directs Key and Peele.
We had like the best of the best.
Yeah.
It was
great team.
I'm still talking about it. I still talk about that show.
So do we.
I still talk about that
show. We loved it.
And I don't want to imply that I've had like nothing good happen to me
since.
You've
had a lot of good.
It was just that good.
And that was our intention, is that we wanted to create something that people love. And because without a lot of, you know, sort of outside forces on top of us saying, you need to do it this way, or we needed to bring it in a certain direction that it was. I felt like we could make the show that we wanted to make.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Short of doing a podcast, that doesn't happen very often. Mm-mm. But that's no. why so many of us do that too.
Yeah.
This is also exciting for me because I don't have two people on very often, but I have because
there just aren't enough women. That's the problem. Because I don't want to burn through two at one time.
I could have half a woman and then maybe I'd have it for a little longer.
Yeah. Man equals half.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, that's just math, guys. Nobody can argue that.
One woman equals half. One woman. That's actually a huge compliment to a woman.
It is.
One man equals half a woman.
I always flip-flop my insult math. I always flip-flop my insult math. But this is exciting because the couple of times that I have had two people on, there is a lot of like, and where were you raised? And what about you? Mm-hmm. And how about, and what were your parents like? This mm-hmm. is the first time I've ever had siblings.
Siblings? You've never had siblings on?
I've never had siblings on.
Mm, you got to have Laura and Sarah Silverman on.
This is going to be, that would actually be great.
Or the Baldwins.
Next on my list.
The Baldwin twins.
You guys, unfortunately, the Baldwin twins weren't available.
Aren't there some like female Baldwin twins? No, that is, it was a very big part. And we feel like the biggest part of being twins is being raised at the same time and under the same circumstances and with the same set of surroundings. I mean, you see it way more now that we have kids. Like, we have kids that are – my youngest is a year and a half older than Jay's son.
My oldest.
His oldest son. And they're like a generation apart. Like, he plays with the phone and does stuff that my youngest doesn't even do. I mean, like, it's a humongous gap between that. And when I think about the fact that had they grown up at the exact same time, it's a different thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we're talking like – 18 months here, but
that does blow me. I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about the speed of technology affecting.
There's no
like,
way you would
of
unless
kids being born and developing that way.
Yeah,
but it's a different like it's in many ways. I'm not trying to say it's harder for me to raise kids now than when Randy was raising kids back when he was doing it
way back when.
But it is a different ballgame. No, it is. It feels very different. It feels like you're constantly fighting the battle against technology.
Yeah.
You're like, how can I get this kid away from this and into out?
It's
outdoors?
Like AI.
Do you think it's a losing battle in the sense that at some point people are going to stop even thinking that there is a battle?
Yes, I think people will stop thinking that there is a battle. I think sometimes I think that way too.
Yeah, because I honestly don't know. I mean. Because
we don't know how,
because when you're a young person, you think to yourself, I don't want to be the curmudgeon. Like, I'm never going to be the person that says, in my day. And that isn't in my day situation.
I just said in my day the other day. I was like, and when I was a kid and I started saying these words were coming out of my mouth. And I'm like, oh, geez.
I know.
I was like, when I was a kid, we didn't have phones. And he was like, well, how did people call you? And I was like, well, there were phones at the house, but like we weren't walking around holding a phone. And he was like, well, did you have iPads? And I was like, no. He's like, no iPad. That was like bigger than the phone. I was like, no. And he's like,
well, how'd you play Angry Birds?
Yeah, he did.
Well, we wrote it down on a thing.
We shot at actual birds out of slingshots at pigs. No, it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, we didn't have that. I was like, we messed around outside and we played sports and we played games and stuff. And it was really fun. And, you know, I don't know that got through to him, and I have no idea.
There's no human way that got through to him.
Yeah. Sure, I'm assuming it didn't.
Because if you're like me, you can still connect back. Like, you can still – I guess this may be true for everyone. You connect back to the kid that you were, and that feels real close. But then you look at a child and realize how far away it is. So it's not like you're remembering your time kind of distantly. Like –
You immediately get transported.
It's all happening at once.
When I see my 9-year-old, who kind of looks like she looks like me when I was a kid, like same face, same everything, I'm transported back to when I was that age. They just went to school today for the first.
Yeah, my son first day of kindergarten today, and I got nervous. I told the teacher I had anxiety.
Sure.
The first day of school anxiety as you're walking to school, I'm like, who are these kids going to be? How am I going to connect with these kids? I mean, I really need to connect with these goddamn kids. For Randy and I, we growing up, you know, we were never in the same class, and so
they separated us.
It was like
the
time our dad made us work right before the summer of our senior year.
We were teenagers, 18.
Before we went to University of Michigan, we both went there. Before we went there, we had a summer, and we didn't have a car, so our dad would drop us off and he wanted us to work at the same place as he went down to work downtown St. Louis from the, you know, like out west to downtown east into St. Louis. And he dropped us off at a full service gas station where he got his car, where he would like get gas on the way down there. And he talked them into hiring us, but they wouldn't hire us at the same station because they felt like if I saw him, this was their explanation.
Stealing gas.
If I saw Jason stealing gas, I wouldn't report it. Therefore, I guess proving the old theory that blood is thicker than gas. Is that a thing? Blood is thicker than gas? So blood is thicker than methane. And so ethanol. And so they separated us and put us in two separate full-service Clark gas stations that were a mile apart. So our dad just had to drop us off at two places on his way down to work. But
and that was a continuation of
that was like in high about, in school like, they're
better, like, well, listen, we better separate.
What
these
if he did something
ASAP.
Immoral and I saw it? I would.
But I remember feeling like, oh yeah, you know, I don't have my brother, and going into this thing, it's all me in this world, which I was exciting, and then it was also anxiety producing.
Sure. But that is interesting because I don't feel like – I guess I haven't really gone in depth with twins I've known about what their school was like. And I never I never had classes with twins. Like there were a couple – there were. You're right. There are so many more today because of like
– fertility drugs and all. People having babies later.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a whole thing.
So I feel like there were like a couple of sets of twins maybe, and they were sort of – fascinating to people.
They weren't in
and,
the same class. They were outside.
But I don't, but you know what? I think this is weird, but I think the only twins I even knew didn't even go to my school.
Right.
They were like, they rode my bus. So
it was
I had no
such
idea
a random, it was a much bigger deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe one of the factors that got us into doing comedy is that people were fascinated by you and then by the two of us. And then it was sort of like everybody that we had this attention on us.
Mm-hmm.
So now what do you do with it?
Right.
You could either shy away from it, which, you know, some people were, but that
understandably
that wasn't in our makeup. We were like huge fans of comedy, even from a younger than that age. So we were like, let's just be funny and see what it does. And we were funny with each other and funny with our parents and their friends.
Yeah, we fought, but we do not fight. My kids are not great at like fighting and handling it on their own.
Yeah.
I have two daughters that are
like
two years apart. Not only do they engage me, this is what my new role has become, because the younger one is now of the age where she is not putting up with anything. She's really putting her foot down and not putting up with it. And so it is like it comes to a head. And basically, I am a small claims court judge. That's what I've become. I'm no longer father. Right. I'm just literally like, let me look. I want to hear every, it's sure. Essentially, I could be listening to someone talk about how they didn't pay the rent for 3 months and like,
he
went
said
upstairs.
I could.
He hit me with an oven cord. I'm like, that is what I'm dealing with on a day to day basis. God. I am a small claims court.
You shouldn't
court
have
judge.
Bought that oven cord.
And you did. And you guys weren't like that when you were
we
like.
We would fight and then get done with it and then get over it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are there any other kids in your family?
No, just us.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then – where were you when you were in high school?
St. Louis.
You were in St. Louis.
St. Louis, Missouri. I went to a public high school this year. This is so great. And I'm so sad that we actually won't be there for the actual ceremony, but we are being inducted into our school district's Hall of Fame.
Amazing.
I mean,
you know that your school district had a Hall of Fame before this happened?
Well, no. I mean, they wanted to induct us 2 years ago and then we couldn't do it. So we knew
about
it.
No, but
I
think that was the moment we found out about it.
Because my dad just was inducted into the high school I went to and that he taught at Hall of Fame. And I was like,
yeah, Hall of Fame. To be honest with you, I don't care.
Who else is in the Hall of Fame in your school district?
It's lots of people. I mean,
Pete Rowe is not inducted. He's not allowed because he gambled on high school games. No. Who else? I don't even know who. A lot of people who went on to be journalists and it's a list, some authors. It's a cool list. It's actually an honor to be a part of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just it's just not something you think about if you don't live in the place where you came from. And
but it was a public school. I give it a lot of credit. We kind of took it. We had a little bit of a chip on our shoulder. Like we're in this public school and there were some great private schools. Like John Hamm went to the private school and there was like a really good one called Burroughs. Of course, Hammer went there. Then he went back and taught acting there for a while kind of left LA for a while, came back to St. Louis and taught at John Burroughs High School.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
But we always had a little bit of a chip on our shoulder. We went to Parkway North High School and we thought, you know, it was a much more mixed
racial. Had you gone to private school up to that point or no?
No.
But you just were aware of the
private school. You're aware. You're aware of all the other schools and the wealth and the sort of – and we were like – our smart kids were really smart, and we sent a lot of kids to Ivy League schools and really good schools, and we took a lot of pride in that. It was almost like, oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, we can. I mean, you were really proud of the public education that we wound up getting. I mean, and now our kids are both in public schools here in LA, which is a much more you're threading a needle there. I mean, there's so few great schools. But with the influx of type A parents, like some that were on the fence are now getting better and whatnot. But it is cool. I'm excited that we're in the public school. I think it's great.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I'm totally dyed in the wool, sort of liberal public education person that wants so much for funding to go into that instead of everything getting funneled into private schools and
stuff. I also think it's good. I mean, I was sitting in the orientation day. I think it's good to have like crappy desks. And like, you know, like
– Not everything has to be
like
state of the art.
And so that
– I was almost going to say not everything has to be the Minority Report. That's such a reference from like 10 years ago. Like now, like iPads do that.
That would be public school. You only have Minority
We just
report.
Got Minority Report technology.
Like with both – well, you have to use both hands
to – swipe a giant –
I just do it with one finger.
Yeah.
I point my finger at it and it moves it over.
You needed both hands
to swipe it across.
I needed John King's
special gloves with
ham
like little,
hands.
That's right.
Yeah.
But what were you saying, Jay?
I was just saying, I think it's kind of cool that, you know, that kids deal with what resources you have, and maybe they aren't always the best, but you figure out how to make this work for you, because that ultimately is more like what the world will be for you.
I think – well, I love what you're saying, and I do feel like there is – I mean, that is kind of going against the flow of that sort of helicopter parent thing that everyone talks about. And I'm not a parent, so I'm sort of on the periphery of it, looking at it more, I guess, objectively. I don't know if that I'm ever objective.
No,
but,
you judge the shit out of
it. And
rightfully so.
Right.
But yeah, I do think that – like I was just listening to something – I don't know how recent it was. It might have been like a fairly recent TED Talk or something about somebody who created this sort of like – it's I think it's called like tinkering school or something like that. It's like a camp that kids can go to where they can kind of do things that all parents now think is like too dangerous. Like don't let them play with matches ever. Don't let them tinker around with like broken anything. You know, don't – and there's a place like that in I think Scotland too. But there's this sort of like uprising of, hey, you know what? We need to back off. You know what I mean? Like, how broken is this generation? Not really. Not broken, but yet
not broken.
We're
and
out playing, you know, by ourselves.
And no one really knows the effects of what it is if you protect. There's this big balance, yes. And I feel like this is the balance that we're constantly trying to figure out. You know, like, what's over it? When does it hurt them by overprotecting them? You might save them in the moment, but screw them later.
I know.
And you're – I mean, that's the big question, and that's the – I mean, it's kind of
– I think we were lucky in when we were kids because we had each other. Certainly even going through like the awkward time of high school, I think we had – our parents were less sort of hovering with us and involved in trying to keep us because they knew we had each other. So we were never really alone. Mm-hmm. We had backing and we had support of somebody. I think that – that helped us.
Yeah. Well, how does that come into play in terms of, you know, obviously classes that you guys were taking when you are in a high school? Like, it's not like someone can decide to separate you, right? I mean, if you're going to take algebra, did you end up with the same – or, you know, were you in classes together?
We kind of weren't.
We weren't.
Still
we
weren't.
We really weren't. In high school, they didn't either. They just didn't want us – I don't know why they made a big deal out of that.
But it was good. Yeah, they really did.
It was good. It forced us to kind of develop
your own
identity.
Like, you have to do your own homework. Somebody could do – I guess it's true. I guess it could be like one of you does one class's homework and the other one does the other class's. Like, it's just going to be shortcuts all the way through.
Which will only hurt you. Although, I mean, I to this day can't tell you one thing that I remember from like chemistry or physics.
Calculus. What about calculus?
Like,
none of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to do long division with one of my kids and I was like, this is how I ended the whole thing. I was like, well, this is the way I would do it. That's never a good thing to say to your kid, is there?
Yeah.
Well, this is the way I did.
There's more than one right answer. Right. No,
there isn't.
That is not true. That is not true for math.
This is really one right answer.
Please, don't think that.
But yeah. I mean, it.
Were you guys good students?
We were. Great students.
And is that something that, I mean, because you were talking about kind of the pride that you took and the what education you were able to get out of that. And is that something that you feel like was instilled in you by your parents?
Absolutely. They were like, you better. That was the top priority. That was it.
But and you respected that. You weren't teenagers who were like, our parents are dumb.
No.
You never went through that phase?
We kind of didn't.
I don't know. We were great. We were great kids.
Yeah.
I wish my kids were as good to me as I was as we were to our parents because I don't know. We just were like,
I mean, that didn't mean that we didn't smoke pot when we were in high school. We didn't like go out. We drank, we smoked pot, we partied, we did all the things, you know, we went on scavenger hunts and stole street signs. We did stuff that kids do.
Yeah.
We just weren't – it wasn't all in a giant F you to our parents. Right. It wasn't an attempt
– anger or
it wasn't
like,
fueled by this. So, yeah, there wasn't
watch us
that.
Screw this up.
You Same. Want us to be good in school? We were like, let's do well in school because you know why? Because that's going to give us tons of options when this thing is over of places we can go and start our lives and go somewhere else. So, ultimately, that was what – you know, that's what –
I think we knew we were – getting out of St. Louis. Not that there's anything wrong with St. Louis, but I think we knew that maybe there was something bigger for us out there. Maybe something existed outside of the world that we could even see in that moment.
Yeah.
There was something around a corner for us. And I think we felt it, you know, and being counter to that would have been counterproductive to that goal.
Mm-hmm. And how much communication did you guys have with each other about like actual thoughts and feelings you were having?
About that sort of a thing?
Anything. Just like, you know, would you confide
That's
in each other?
Question.
Or because you know, you're boys. You're two straight boys.
Right.
And so I'm always interested. These guys know with the Boys of Summer series. I'm interested in how much access to your own emotions and kind of that sort of analysis you were giving yourself, or were you just kind of like existing?
It's almost like we rushed past that is almost too. We became even more intimate and even closer than that. That it, sharing the way I felt about something as a high school student with him would have been like, "What are you doing?" Like that's would have felt like a strange talking to us that I was talking to a stranger. We almost went
you
too
sort
far.
Of intuitively already would know kind of what.
And
was
maybe
going
we
on.
Should have more, but I don't know. We were pretty in touch with the way we felt.
Yeah,
and we would share that with other people, but maybe not so much with each other.
And what about girls?
We got involved – well, we were involved with a lot of like – because we were into the Jewish thing too, like some Jewish youth groups and stuff, which exposed us to a lot of different types of people outside of our high school, like kids from other cities and camp kids. And there was a lot of that pervaded
our
social
people
life.
Seemed to – they were culturally a little bit more advanced. And those are the
like
people.
The kids from Minneapolis were like into cool music and into comedy. And we had friends in Kansas City. I had a guy actually who came over to my house recently, a week and a half ago, who lived in Kansas City. He was in this Jewish youth group that we were in. We met on this thing and then we kept in touch with each other and we would send each other videotapes like hilarious sketches, basically sketches on video that we would send back and forth to each other and just send a tape back and forth. And
we weren't doing that with
so
anyone in our high
great.
School.
Yeah, that's
it was just
so
a creative
great,
right?
thing. When you have the opportunity, I was always jealous of my Jewish friends, of which I had many, almost all of my friends. Mm-hmm. And so every time they would go to the JCC or like go to camp or something. Not to say that I didn't have a world that stretched outside of my high school, but that opportunity where you really are experiencing, I mean, unless you're like a jet setting kid who spends,
right.
you know, 2 years abroad, like with their parent, you know, every summer they go somewhere new. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have that, to
but
have
even, that,
even the community of,
even
you know,
that, even that's not even as close to what we're talking about. What we're talking about was this gathering of a bunch of kids who are our age,
sharing
high school age,
your experiences and like your ideas and the things you're into from like the city that you're in. And
being creative together.
So cool.
Be creating. I think that helped us in terms of like starting the creative process for us.
Sure.
More than anything else.
Because we're like, oh, we got to do something. Randy and I would be sitting around. It was almost like you have a set of comedy. We're like, we got to make something on this video that's going to make these people laugh because they're going to show it to their friends in
great.
Kansas City. It's going to be a whole thing. So it got us like really going and creating, and these guys as well. And then it also like you'd come together and there'd be new girls and it was always fun. And it was like there was this electricity around these like events. events, like these weekend long conclaves
sure
or whatever they were.
Yeah.
Or camp in the summertime where you'd go away and you could be a different person. You know, I like high school loved to put you in a little box, specifically public high school. Like, it's, you know, the kids on the football team usually dated the girls right. who were the cheerleader. I mean, it was like a very public high school in the Midwest in the 80s, late 80s. So it was very much like most movies that mm-hmm, were about mm-hmm. high school that we all grew up on. But you could escape that and go to this whole other place where, like, none of those lines existed because all these kids were, like, out to have this other type of experience. And so it was, like, kids who were into these funny, weird movies and these guys who loved comedy and these great, you know, into the Smiths and the, you know, like,
yeah.
now all of a sudden there's, like, all these people who are introducing us to, like, oh, you don't like the Smiths and the Cure? You got to get into this music. Oh, okay. So now we're pulling this stuff that we never even were exposed to in our high school, which was kind of amazing.
And so what were the things that – and this can, I guess, will end up dovetailing into kind of what we were talking about before we got started and what's going on today. Mm-hmm. But who were your influences? What was exciting to you about comedy and who were you watching?
I mean, we were huge Letterman fans. Like, everything Letterman did, everything he did, we were – Letterman and SNL, those two things. So Letterman during the week – and whatever happened, and there was no internet, so you just kind of had to watch it or tape it or whatever.
Right.
And so I remember one specific bit even that, like, turned us on to Letterman when we were very young. It was 85 this bit was. It was a bit about – it was so brilliant because of where it – I know what you're talking about.
It was a viewer mail.
Of course you know what
it was. It was a viewer mail. Well, we talked about this a lot. We love this. It was a viewer mail message that he got and he responded to. And basically it was a message from someone in St. Louis because the St. Louis Cardinals at the time, the Mets, it was like the Cardinals-Mets. In 84, the Mets won the World Series. In 85, the Cardinals lost the World Series. I should have said won, but they lost. 86, the Mets won. 87, the Cardinals went. So it was a very much of a rival. Rivalry in this division, and someone wrote in from St. Louis, "Dear Dave, the Mets are pumped."
No. He wrote a whole other thing.
Yeah, he wrote a whole other thing.
What was the other thing? Can you remember what the other thing was? I don't remember what the other thing was.
I don't know, but at the end, he wrote P.S.
It was like the most – it was such a simple question to ask Dave, like, why would you be asking Dave this question?
Uh-huh.
And at the very end, he said, P.S., the Mets are pond scum. All right. So which Dave, you know, you thought he was going to deal with what he had said in the body of the letter.
Right.
But he said,
thank you
very much, Gary. I remember the guy's name was Gary.
amazing.
thank you very much, Gary.
The Mets are, in fact,
not pun scum. And let me prove it to you with this chart right here.
So he pulls out a chart. And the chart is, okay, so, like, do you remember all of them?
I do.
Okay.
Let's see. Mets, occasionally damp.
Pond scum,
occasionally jam. All right, Gary, fine.
Right, maybe you got that one.
Maybe you got me.
Mets consume microbes.
Pond scum also consumes microbes. Mets have one player named Mookie. Pond scum,
everyone is named Mookie. Hilarious. I mean,
and the crowd goes wild. We're like, what just happened? That is so – for him to take that – left turn
sure.
out of nowhere.
And if I think back on what we did on Cheap Seats and what we did with most record, it's like, let's pick this tiny detail.
I love it.
And then let's blow it out into some
silliness and absurdity.
It was so freeing and sort of wonderful that existed.
It was like electrifying. It was like
– so it was that, and then it was SNL. And again, like our years, the years we sort of, you know, were really – we would like watch SNL, and then the next day, speaking of connecting it to Judaism, we would go to Sunday school the next day, and that's all we would do is redo the sketches from the night before.
Yeah.
So it was like – it was Eddie Murphy. It was, you know, Joe Piscopo before we started working out. Brad Hall, who we met later. We were in a movie. He came to like a screening of a movie. And again, like Brad Hall was like doing the news and Tim Kazurinsky would do like little bits on the
news.
Who
later we had on our podcast in Chicago at Second City.
And got to tell him how much he like couldn't believe it. We were like, are you kidding me? This was, you don't understand us as kids kind of watching this. Because our parents would like go out because they always went out on a Saturday night, leave us with the babysitter. But as they were like going out, that period of time before like they were about to go out was kind of fun because, you know, they were in a good mood because they were about to go out and do something. We were in a good mood because we knew we were going to stay up late and watch TV. But every Saturday night it was Love Boat and Fantasy Island.
Amazing.
And you'd be like watching Dance Fever and Solid Gold before, as it was like kind of leading up to it, and like listening to records and stuff. And I mean, it was, there was like excitement about like the, what the whole evening would bring. And that was all fine. And watching the Incredible Hulk and the Dukes of Hazzard, that's
fine. That was
Friday
nights.
That was Friday nights. That was fine. But
Saturday Night Live was another.
Saturday Night Live and Letterman was when we started to say, all right, all these other things are just things that we're consuming as the public, but these things are ours.
Speaking to you and just
that
like on, like vibrating on a level that is just different.
And I will
that,
and then,
recognize
and then,
it.
And then there was – that's right. That's 100% right. And then there was one other – there was Rodney Dangerfield's like ninth young comedian special, the one that had Sam Kinison on it and Seinfeld.
And Robert Townsend. Go back and watch Robert Townsend set on that thing. It is – you were like – you're not – the greatest stand-up in the world, you're not, but you are, you have a mind that is so creative that of course the Hollywood Shuffle came from you. You know, of course you are going to create all these unbelievable and amazing things because of just the way he spent the first 2 minutes of his act speaking in a pretty solid British accent. And
oh, wow.
Then he flips it.
I think I've seen it.
Robert Townsend is like, he just starts talking in British accent. And he's like, and then as a black man, he's like, I'm from the west side of Chicago. he literally was like, what are you doing? This is so weird and crazy and interesting. And again, that sort of blew our minds. And we would learn everybody's act and we would do it in front of our friends. So
go back and watch Seinfeld's 6-7 minute set from the Young Comedians.
It's a pretty damn near perfect set of comedy.
It is so unreal because he has big bits that like the crowd goes crazy over, little tiny things like he's saying his mom lives in Florida and is always going, what do you think of this wall? What do you think of this wall? And he's like, to me, if it's forcing you to use the door to get out of the room, it's doing its job. Like that is a brilliant joke.
Yeah.
That is not a setup and a punchline joke. That's so specific. When we caught on to Seinfeld and we saw him there and then we started to really get into him and then we saw him doing hours, we like saved our money and we went to the Westport Playhouse, which was in St. Louis, which was a theater in the round, 1,100 seats, and saw Seinfeld come there right after he had done his HBO special. I mean, we were so hooked on him. And we were telling everyone, we're like, you gotta hear this guy. He's so funny and it's such a shame that
you don't know who he is.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
No one's gonna know him.
No one's gonna know who he is.
And we were concerned.
And,
for Jared.
Janet,
and
we were pretty much right.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, this is the thing that I'm observing as I'm talking to you guys. I can't say that this comes as a surprise, but it is interesting to me. Two things came into my mind. Number one, and they're tied together. Number one, the idea that I really feel like you guys kind of understood who you were from a very young age. And that's kind of rare. I think, I mean, a lot of us feel like, I'm the same as I was. But I think a lot of people feel more lost and kind of drifty for, a period of their lives, especially in adolescence. And then two, the idea that the memories that you guys have, I mean, this is kind of stating the obvious, but so many, like, our understanding of memories, like, especially me as an only child, I'm kind of, like, I've forgotten so much because you have to have that other person who experienced it too to keep the memory real.
It's like an oral history.
Exactly.
And you keep retelling it.
Exactly.
And fortunately for us, we're in this business where we can keep retelling it.
Yeah.
Where we can bring it up and talk to you about it and whatnot. I mean, there's another big moment. I would say a huge moment. I mean, I credit our parents with a lot, and our dad, who's no longer here, who was a great and really funny person. I credit him with a lot of, you know, I mean, and we've talked about this on podcasts before, but he was the type of guy that he would take us somewhere, you know, he worked a lot. Okay. He like traveled a lot. He worked for like the paper company in the office. He worked that in St. Louis. It was called Tension Envelope, is such a terror. There was like, that's not someone's last name. It was just like, can you imagine going to a place? It's like,
that's so weird.
Tension is in the name. It's just
that's
awful.
So weird.
So,
but then paired with something that's like the least tense thing you could possibly imagine.
Envelope. And he would take us down there and he would take us there, but he really loved spending time with us. And I didn't feel like, even though he traveled a lot, I did not feel like he was not present. He was present a lot and he loved being around us and he loved taking us everywhere. Everywhere. It didn't matter. You gotta go to the cleaners, gotta go to the gas station. I'll run all the errands with you. And then he'd take us fishing. And I mean, he was just a wonderful person who did a lot with us. But every time he went anywhere, within like 2 seconds of him talking to somebody, and we would just see it from the car. This is like with the time when you just leave your kids in the car and then go in.
And the car's like running, and we're like listening to the radio. Like anyone could have taken
a giant arrow saying, steal
yes,
these kids.
I know, me too.
And so, but we would watch him, and like within like 2 seconds, the person would be laughing. Whatever interaction
wow,
he had.
Oh, yeah.
And you see that over and over and over again, and you're like, ooh, that's important. That's important. And then when we'd, like, I remember we'd be at home and like we would try and be funny. And that was sort of.
This is so easy to picture in the most adorable way.
I know. We would really try and be funny. And I'll never forget this. This was when it was, and our dad like loved Alan Sherman, you know, Hello Mudda, Hello Fat. I mean, he kind of loved those old comedy things and Abbott and Costello.
He kind of
looked like Buddy Hackett, and he also looked like and Lou Costello a little bit, right? That's the look.
Yeah, he's a bigger guy.
Then he looked a little like Sue Costello, which was a weird thing.
Okay, interesting.
Boston comic from the 90s.
Dude, you're not gonna believe it. Dick Sklar looks like.
Anyway, so he kind of had that sort of jolly. He was like a Jewish Santa Claus. You know, mm-hmm. He was kind of roly-poly and just silly in that sort of a way. And you could tell. He was never really – I don't think he ever fulfilled the promise of how funny he could have been. And he owned his own business and had a lot of stress at times. But, like, he was a very funny guy. But what they did one time, and I'll never forget this, and this was so important to us, and it is to this day one of my favorite movies of all time. I don't even know how old we were, but our uncle who worked at an appliance store in Southern California called Phil and Jim's. Mm-hmm. It was a appliance store chain, and then he unceremoniously got released from the company, which sucked, but he went on to do other things, and he's still around, and he's a wonderful guy. Uncle Bob, he got us like a Hitachi VCR, and this is like when it could have been Beta or VCR. We had friends that had Betas, and this was like
it's a both.
VCR. It was both. But the Hitachi, which was so funny because it had a remote control that was attached. It was Hitachi.
Oh, sure.
It was attached to it.
And how like, dare you?
But it
how
would, dare you? But it wouldn't reach the couch. So literally you had to stand. You were like, you would have done better by just pressing the button.
You were Hitachi.
You were Hitachi.
So
he also sent us like some videotapes and whatnot, and our parents got a hold of Airplane when it came out on videotape.
Yeah.
This was a couple years after it had come out, and it came out on videotape, and we had a bunch of families over and watched all of us watch Airplane together. Now, we didn't do this for any other movie, okay?
It's such a perfect movie to do that.
It was. First of all, there's tits in it. I should mention that. You're like,
anytime you can get a little sneak peek.
But we're like
something.
10. Yeah. I want to say like 10. This is probably like 82. And we're there's tits in it. There's shit that hits the fan. I mean, there's like tons of. So, but we sat down as a fan, and I remember what an event it was, having people over in our den, watching that everybody made the popcorn, everyone sat down, we all sat, like as a group sat down and watched this movie, friends and other kids, and we were laughing so hard, and it was an event.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kept this was an important thing. That like comedy is important.
Absolutely.
In some way.
Watching our dad laugh really hard at that was very significant.
Yeah. I mean, because my dad's really funny too. And that is such a huge, because, you know, a lot of the time the joke gets made on my podcast and elsewhere that, you know, you have to be broken to become a comedian, that sort of cliche and stuff. And certainly that is that is often true, but that the influences that you can get from the funny people in your life as a youth and like what you watch and what you're exposed to all the way from Sesame Street and The Muppet Show and things like that. If you're fortunate to have parents who really make that a priority in one way or another, I do think it just really gets in there and cements so early, and you understand like the natural high of humor on a really profound foundational level, and it becomes like a part of you in a way that you kind of need to keep – you want to keep growing that. You want to keep growing it.
And it's up to you how you then sort of take it. I mean, you could be like, oh, I'm just going to be a funny person who just is
– Or I'll be a lover of comedy for the rest of my life.
Or I look at the world in a funny way or this or that. But
I don't think you have to be broken to succeed even at comedy. I think it is a thing that drives a lot of people.
You need to have a drive. Whatever that drive is, it's something has to drive you.
If something is broken inside of you, that is usually and your drive is to either fix it or understand why it happened, that is usually a very powerful drive. If you have an extreme passion for something, then that can be an equally powerful drive. I mean, I don't know that we were broken. I definitely think
– Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You just don't – that's not where I see it coming from.
But I think we lived a different existence than 99% of the world, which is that we, you know, incubated inside of a person at the same time. We came out at the same time. We experienced all these things at the same time. And we are trying to make sense of that, or we have tried to make sense of that our whole lives. And I think comedy is a really interesting way to try to figure it out.
Yeah. And it's manifested itself in other ways, you know, as we get older. So it manifests itself in ways of like, well, this industry kind of doesn't know what to do with us. Mm-hmm. They really don't. I mean, there are the twin roles and stuff that they come along every once in a while. So we've had to create a lot of what our own thing is going to be, and it's really on us. And you're a long shot almost every time, you know, and sometimes it hits and sometimes it goes through and sometimes it's miraculous. And other times you get in there and you win a job and then lose it because they're like, this doesn't work.
Right.
And so that's what we're driving against, this thing of like it's not allowing us in. And so we have to figure out a way to get in. And that is our drive, because we do believe what we have to say is significant on some level for some people.
Mm-hmm. Listen, this is a very pedestrian question. I'm embarrassed to ask it because you probably get asked it all the time. But because
which
you
one
guys
are you?
Had so – but which one – who am I talking to right now?
Sorry.
Who am I talking to?
Sorry, new phone. Who is this?
Who am I talking to? I just wonder, because you had so much in common and you shared so much of the same passions and views and stuff. Were there situations where one of you would like a girl and the other one would be like, I also kind of really like her. Like,
yeah,
how did that work?
Yeah, that's happened. I think that's happened. And then you just kind of sort of say, all right, well, who's been happy the most recently?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Then the other we're pretty generous with each other in terms of like, I won't step in and, you know, try.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you had that. I mean, I do know a couple of twins who are like really had to get over their incessant
rivalry.
Feel of rivalry and like competition and identity in that way. Like, I've got to separate myself from this person. I've got to, you know.
It always felt like a huge time waster.
That's that maturity I'm talking about.
It would have been
so
like
impressive.
I think our parents also instilled our father's brother. He had two brothers, and his older brother, who he was very close with, very, very close.
Three of them were as tight as can be. I think there was probably 5 years between the three of them.
This is pretty
insane.
So
that could have gone either way for sure. Yeah.
The night before his wedding, my father's father, which was out here in California.
The older brother.
The night before the older brother's
our
wedding.
Our dad was in the middle.
Okay.
Our father's father died here in California.
On the plane.
Oh, was it on the plane?
On the plane.
It was on the plane, yeah.
He had a heart attack on the plane.
That's right. But then they landed here and he died. So it was devastating for the family. There was the woman who our uncle was marrying and insisted on the wedding continuing, even though everyone was like, what are you talking about? There's a father. So this started this rift. So our grandmother was like, well, okay, well, there can't be any dancing at the wedding because it's the Jewish tradition. It was this whole thing. So that severed that family forever for 25 years. We didn't really know our uncle. We saw him once. And our dad – it broke our dad's heart to not have this person in his life. And I think from a very early age, he was like, I can't let this happen to these boys. I can't let what happened to me happen to these kids. And so from a very early age, he was very clear, like, you can have differences. You can fight with each other, but you don't – you know, your family is the most important thing and you don't – he didn't outright say, look what happened to me and Uncle Kenny. But like, this is the – I think that was the defining moment for him in terms of how he was going to raise us. And so as a result,
and by the way, he dealt with this in another way too. I mean, this is crazy. So we had a lot of family in St. Louis where we grew up. There was a lot of family there. And it was his bar mitzvah, I think our dad had his bar mitzvah when he was 13 years old. And then afterwards was this party at our grandma
at his parents' house. And they have this great house in like University City near WashU. Great old house. And it was just, they were having this party there. And they invited all the relatives, the other side of the, you know, all the people from the grandma's side on the other thing. And they said they couldn't come because they were having a barbecue. They were going to a barbecue. Now, a bar mitzvah is next to your wedding is like the most important.
There's only one. It only happens one time. Right.
And so our grandmother, she was pretty domineering. She was pretty fierce, but she also had a wicked sense of humor too, was like, yeah, that's right. Because, you can have a bar mitzvah anytime, but there's only once when you can go to a barbecue. So fuck you.
Right.
And she was like that. So basically that half of the family, they cut them off. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we won't talk to you. And what you just did proved to us the way you feel about us and the way you felt, who knows why and all this other stuff. Again, this is stuff that's like we've kind of just have learned somewhat recently.
Interesting.
And what's crazy with Facebook and with the fact that we are visible people, some of those people from that side have like –
Try to get back
in touch with us. Yeah. And I'm like ambivalent. I mean, these are kids of the other people who acted crappy, but like, I'm just like,
I'm all fine with it, but I'm also like, I have no relationship to you because I don't know you. So
right. You
are just a stranger saying hi.
But like, I think that being in our dad's past too, he was sort of like, I don't want to create any sort of you shouldn't allow, it was sort of like, don't let, he said two things to us. Don't fight in public.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing. Don't fight in public, which, once we started playing sports, like that kind of went off out because like, you know, we'd be one of us, I'd be pitching and Jay would be in the outfield. And if I was like not doing well, he would just like be getting on me from the outfield in a way that like other.
Didn't you see us get on each other during Back on Tops?
Yes. Oh yeah. You saw us get on each other. Like we'd screw up
but
lines
like,
and stuff.
It was so, it's funny. So. It's still
it was very funny.
It's,
yes.
I mean, it's like you're clearly, it's like a married couple that you're not worried are going to get divorced. You know what I'm saying? It's the difference between like the old couple that you're like, they love each other versus like there was something very wrong here that need to not be in each other's lives.
Right. No, but like you'd get other kids on other teams like on the base pass going like, hey, leave him alone. He's trying his best, all right? Yes, I got a double off him, but he's trying his best.
What sports were you guys playing besides baseball?
Baseball, soccer. A little bit of basketball and then golf and tennis on our own.
Yeah.
Love tennis.
And tennis. I still love tennis.
Which you were part of that great.
So good on tennis.
And you, like,
we've used you in everything we've ever done.
Oh, God. It's
you should know that. You should know
and
that.
And are always thinking of, you know, that is my goal. This is what I try to tell our friend. We have a really good friend who I think is one of the greatest impressionists. His name is Gar Reines. He's the batting stance guy. He can do any batting stance. Any.
I mean, any player in the last 50 years.
In the last 50 years. If
That's
you say,
amazing.
You name a player who you
God,
grew up with.
It would be so wasted on me.
So wasted on you. Whatever. I mean,
no, but
put
that's
it this
amazing.
Way. He was on Letterman. He did on Letterman.
Yeah.
I highly recommend going to see it. And you don't, but like what he does is he'll do a little thing like Derek Jeter. We all know who Derek Jeter is.
Yeah.
He's retiring this year. And he was like, Derek Jeter calls for timeout. He doesn't, when he steps into the batter's box to dig his feet in and cleats in, you know, most guys put the hand up to the umpire to timeout. He's like, Jeter calls with his wrists. It's such like a feminine thing that he does. And Letterman was laughing so hard and he did all that. And he's just amazing. And I was throwing a baseball around with him because Jay and I are going to throw out the first pitch at a Cardinals game.
Oh, that's so cool.
September 20th.
That's
so
cool.
So excited, but I gotta start as an old man. I gotta start throwing, or else my
loosen
arms
it
gonna.
Hey,
you
yeah,
got 50
I
cent
yeah,
it down the first baseline. Yeah,
right.
I mean, you gotta start throwing. And so I was throwing with him, and I said to him, and I said this out loud, and I was like, I just want to be powerful enough that I can then employ all of our friends who we love so much, who we know, like we trust ourselves in terms of talent and in terms of being able to identify what talent is for us. That's all I want.
I know.
That's all I want
too,
to be powerful
to
enough that I could just give
like
everyone a job.
Christopher Guestie world where it's like,
yes.
you know, we're going to be doing something next year.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is yet, but it's happening.
You go do what you do, but make sure you come back for me for
yeah,
this thing
exactly.
that we're going to do.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to get into some MASH, guys. This is how I end my podcast.
And we never even got to where we were talking to.
I know. It's true. It's true. Listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I jotted down some categories while
some
you guys were talking some categories. And you do get to answer separately. You may have some of the same answers. Mm. But I'm going to start with each of you three bands that you could conjure up, drop of a hat, living or dead, singer-songwriter, doesn't matter, who basically can sort of perform at your behest whenever you want.
Oh, wow. My God.
Oh, my God. Most of the questions are like this.
Oh, my God. I'm kidding.
I've got
You'll
mine.
End up with one because that's how MASH works. Okay. It's a process of elimination.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me start. Okay. Can I give the reasoning for why or do just say what it is?
I think what it is because only because we have two and I don't want to run out of much.
The Smiths. Okay, with Morrissey.
And FYI, no one has bothered with a this is Randy and this is Jason, so it's been a waste of time. But for Randy.
The Smiths, Elvis Costello, and the Attractions, and the Hold Steady.
Great. Jay.
Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Great.
Wilco.
Nice.
And... maybe like from the earlier side, My Morning Jacket.
Oh, nice. Good pulls, guys. Mm-hmm, I should have known you'd be quick on your feet. Mm-hmm. Okay, next thing. Tomorrow, Matrix style, no endless training and practice necessary. Three sports you wake up and are the fucking best at.
Wow. Easily. Want to dunk a basketball? Hands down, golf, like a zero, like playing under par golf would be just so much fun. And I'm trying to think what else, what other sport?
While he's thinking too, Jay, if you have ones that you want to throw out,
I'd say soccer, like World Cup level soccer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what this is.
That's what it is. It'd be basketball for me, too.
Great.
Because it's just something I could
never do. That's good because I put it out of order. So when this, like, determines itself, both of you can be good basketball players.
I think it would be cool. This is a sport I've never done, but I think it'd be really cool to be good at surfing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
me too. There's like 1,000 reasons I'm afraid that will never happen for me, and it'd be great to just erase all of them and just be an amazing surfer.
I would say hockey.
Great. Great, great, great. Okay. Three movies that you can jump into. And I don't mean you're in them as an actor. I mean they are real worlds. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, like Trading Places is real or whatever.
Easily. Dazed and Confused.
Great.
Like hands down, Dazed and Confused.
Great.
What else? What other? I mean, that's like a given. That is a given. I would go to every single thing. I'd be at that party. Just hanging out at the playing billiards. I'd be at the baseball game rooting for Wiley Wiggins. I don't care. I don't care. I'm there at everything.
Sure.
I'll paddle a few kids. I don't give a shit. Just everything about that was incredible.
I'd say for me, Anchorman, the original Anchorman.
Love it.
That world, just to be in their universe.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be in the newsroom, just a guy working in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. That's all I would want to be. That would be ridiculous. I would also say, and this is a weird small indie thing, but I loved their lives, even though they got a little weird, Walking and Talking.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
Did you want to like work in the video store with the ugly guy?
Yeah. And if everyone were that kind of articulate and sort of self-aware and interesting and communicating.
Nicole Hall?
Hall of Center. I'm such a huge fan.
Me too. Station Agent.
Oh, great.
So great. I would just love to sit on the porch with Patricia, what's her name?
Clarkson.
Oh, yeah. Just Bobby Cannavale. And you know, I just saw a movie that I thought was so sweet. And I kept wanting there to be like more of an edge, but then I was like, what is this saying about me?
That I really enjoy it.
I thought but I don't know if I want to jump into this world, but I'm just going to mention that I thought it was sweet was Chef.
Oh God, I loved it too.
I thought it was sweet. I mean,
I feel Favreau being like, "Hey, I can make movies." You know what I mean? Like, I can make a movie that I feel great about that doesn't involve something blowing up.
Right, and I felt like he was, like he kind of was like, "This is what I want to make right now," and everybody pushing me to go in this direction or whatever, but it wouldn't be that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. I feel the same.
Breaking Away.
Oh, thank you.
Breaking Away.
God, me too.
You're not a cutter. I'm a cutter.
Listen, I would
You're
be
not a cutter.
I want to be
Have
a cutter because I want to jump right off into that quarry and go for a swim with
end
my
up
buddies,
in a refrigerator.
Up to and including Daniel Stern, might marry Daniel Stern's character.
Oh, I mean, how hilarious that. How you doing, Zero. Buddy? Well, aside from what's going on in the Middle East, I think I'm doing all right.
Great line. Great line.
Hilarious. I know I'm paraphrasing it, but
yeah.
I mean, but I can't even I mean, I've just completely skipped over like every Woody Allen movie where you're just like,
I mean, that's what I was gonna say.
I know these are off the cuff.
I just watched Annie Hall again, which of course, okay, it's easy to say you like Annie Hall. I mean, again, I would live in Hannah and Her Sisters. I like that universe. Every Woody Allen.
I want to be at every party where there's an old person who used to be on Broadway.
He's a narcissist. His marriage is falling apart, but he's leading this great
party.
He gets the shit together to sing the one song.
The wish fulfillment of all the children running around this table in this like 12-room New York City apartment. Is and every single person is divorced but okay with their exes and like somehow reconnecting with everybody and everybody
it's
is
so
very
ridiculously evolved.
I know. It really is. And then I think I would even up the ante. I might up the ante and go into something that has magic in it too, like Alice or Purple Rose of Cairo or something.
Purple Rose of Cairo.
It's
but
everything and then there's like
and then now I'm like thinking like, oh my god,
match point
the
Royal
Tannenbaum.
No. Yeah.
The Royal Tannenbaums.
Like you can do a swip swap if you need to on
anything.
And you still get one. Do you want to do Annie Hall or do you want to do a different one?
I think I'm going to say Annie Hall. The scene where they're out at Paul Simon's house and there's like a lot of dancing going on at a day party, which for me I just love.
Perfect.
There's a moment where now I'm blanking on his name. Who's the actor? His buddy who plays who he calls Max.
Tony Roberts.
Tony Roberts.
Oh yeah.
Where Tony Roberts. Woody Allen introduces him to this tall model person who's playing, who I don't know her name, but she's Paul Simon's girlfriend in the scene, and he's like, "Well, Woody Allen's like, you guys are both dressed in white. You guys can connect with each other." And he's eating nuts. Tony Roberts. He's like, "Yeah, maybe we can operate together." It was just a tiny throwaway moment that I was like, "Are you kidding me?"
That
and then, I want to be in that party. I want to turn to someone and be like, "He gives great meaning."
Oh
that
my God.
And then
Absolutely.
when Jeff Goldblum was like, "I've forgotten my mantra," I thought was such a corny line until I recently started meditating. And like my kids wanted to meditate and we all got mantras. Just this is one great
Adorable.
Moment. This is one great moment. And so
she's got to do the mashups.
I know she's got to do the mashups, but we were getting our mantras. And like the guy does like a Sanskrit thing where he does the whole ceremony and chants and puts like, you know, rice and water and flowers and dips them all in and then
Beautiful.
Gives you your mantra. It was so great. And he wanted the two of us to be there while my two daughters were receiving their mantra. And each person when you're receiving your mantra is holding like a big sunflower. And I'm looking at my wife and I'm like, I can't believe these kids want to do this. This is so great. And I look back over my kids and they are literally beating the shit out of each other with their flowers. I was like, stop beating the crap out of your sister while
with
she's receiving
flowers.
Her mantra.
Too much irony, guys. Too much irony.
Guys.
It's too
much.
Thick with irony.
Nice.
Beautiful. Okay. Three places that you would want to have a vacation home anywhere in the world.
What are you
Everywhere.
Doing to me?
Everywhere.
What are you doing to me? I'll tell you, there's a place that I go, and I was just back there with my family.
Randy.
It's me, Randy. In Long Island, it's the Isle of Wight, W-I-G-H-T. It's right in Lawrence, Long Island.
A lot of W-H-I-T-E people out there.
Yeah, a lot of W-H-I-T people in W-I-G-H-T. And there are a bunch of homes out there that are like just in this small area. And Amy's mom and stepdad have a house there. But there's some
Is
other
that
ones
a different Isle of Wight than what's in on M-64?
Yes.
You know, it is? There's a different Isle?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's an Isle of Wight in England.
There must be.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so this
You never know. Sometimes they sing about like crazy places like Tucson. So
yeah, no.
You never know. But
this is, I mean, this is a small kind of area, but it's like right on protected marshland and it's just beautiful. And it's close to the city. And I mean, I just would love to have it. That's one. That is one place that I would definitely have a house.
I'm going to say for me,
these are great questions.
I mean, these are such good questions.
That's why I love this game.
I think I'm thinking of the places that I've been. Like I would love to get a place down in Patagonia. I've been down there and it is just in the Chilean side, in the
Torres del Paine National Park. It is unbelievable.
I'm going to practically say Palm Springs. I love Palm Springs. I love going out there. I just love like a – and again, this is why I'd want it. I'd want it so that I could just invite all of our friends to come out. Come on, let's go. Again, I want to just be as – that's a reason to be like successful and whatnot, to be like, come on out to the Palm Springs house. We're going out this weekend and just show up. I mean like that to me is – is joy. I mean, that is pure joy.
I know.
Joy.
It sounds like the Palm Springs version of everybody getting together and watching airplanes.
Right.
That's right.
It is.
That's it.
I'd want to place a vacation house to be an apartment in New York City.
Great.
Apartment. I would love that. I would absolutely love
it. Oh, I can't decide downtown, whether it West might be Village. A mansion, apartment, shack, or house. So wow. We don't know because that's how MASH works. But I love I've got NYC in here.
Oh, I would love San Francisco too.
Great. Right there with you.
So just roll out for Sketchfest and we're good to go.
Yep, done.
How about Mill Valley? Like just right out. Mm.
Go for it.
Right, or Tiburon. I mean, that's where my in-laws live. It's unreal. All right.
What do you want me to put? Tiburon?
No, that's too close to the in-laws. Nothing against that. I'm against it,
but close enough.
It's definitely a vacation home. That's
I would say maybe like Portland. Portland.
Right. Couldn't love it more.
Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Now, this is a little awkward, but this is a component of MASH. Listen. You both have beautiful wives. I know them both. Mm-hmm. I adore them both. All right. Now, in the MASH, you do usually get a crush. Mm-hmm. Now, that could just be like – maybe it ends up just being a date. But this is an alternate universe. Mm-hmm. It could be people that you think
you don't
want to
get in trouble,
now.
Don't say anyone that's at your kid's – a mom at your kid's school. Yeah. That would
My
completely
daughter
get your
has the sweetest friend. Yeah. No. Or it could also be like, you know, hearkening back to like, you know, I'll always back go for a Daphne Zuniga and the Sure Thing reference kind of thing too. Or like, you know, I mean, it's hard to go wrong with a Jennifer – what's her name? Why am I blanking
Jason
on it?
Lee.
From
Jennifer Grey, Dirty Dancing.
Jennifer Connelly, Labyrinth. That one comes up a lot.
That's true. Jennifer Connelly.
Anyway, so three crushes.
Jennifer Grey, pre-nose. Let me see. Crushes. Oh, my God.
I'll do one. Kate Winslet, Little Children.
Ugh, agreed.
Jesus.
Oh, man.
Kidding me?
Cute.
Come on.
Terrific.
Wow. This is hard. This is hard because, like, if I do ever think about it, it's, like, so stuffed down.
Uh-huh. We get crushes, even when we're not happy.
Yes,
we get crushes.
Absolutely. God, who do I just – I mean, there are a lot of, like
– oh, I mean, it almost seems like too cliche to say it, but I do watch the show and I do – as a Jew, it makes me hard to say this about this person. Heidi Klum is so cute.
I know, she's
on
so
that
cute.
Goddamn show.
I know.
I ignore the fact that she was a supermodel. Just go, ooh, she's so cute.
Yeah.
She's like,
she is ridiculous.
She really is.
Yeah. She's making me okay with Germany.
I think she's Austrian.
I have a huge, let's see, who else? Like, I love athletes. I have a huge crush on, I love Jenny Finch, the pitcher, the softball pitcher.
Great.
I think she's a little tall, but I love her. She's amazing.
In our MASH universe, it all balances.
It's all good.
I'm trying to think who else. God. Jesus, this is really hard because I don't even.
I'll throw a Tina Fey in there. I mean, and that's even someone in our age wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But she's just so funny and
so cute.
And you would just be like, ooh, what a fun
life. No, this is all great. Like, I can't tell you how glad I am that you're not picking just like random, stupid
people. I mean, look. It's hard to get over Phoebe Cates in Fast Times.
That's what I'm talking about.
I mean,
this is your opportunity to call back those teenage feelings.
But then there's like that big thing if you're like masturbating to her, like coming out of the pool, there's always a moment where you're finishing up and then you're masturbating to Judge. Judge Reinhold masturbating. And then it's like an M.C. Escher painting of masturbation.
So to speak.
You gotta get it done. You gotta get it done fast.
Oh my God!
Get her done.
It was a joy to write Phoebe Cates' name.
Get her done. Have people done Phoebe Cates?
I think one person said Phoebe Cates.
You knew
before.
Who we met and we got to work with, and God damn, she was so cute. Oh. And I would is Elizabeth Shue.
Oh, for sure. Great
she's and like
one.
When she got in shape and was like, oh, because she was always cute, like in Cocktail and Karate Kid, but like she started to like. exercised. And she was like in good shape. And she's like, I mean, she was beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
And she's definitely within our, like, yeah. She's a little older than us, but like in our age
though.
Range.
And funny too, it turns out. Yeah. Great, great, great. Okay. Three.
And Nicki Minaj.
No, it's over and I'm so glad. Okay. Next one is three foods. That you can conjure up whenever you want. It would just be sitting right next to you. It could be as specific as mm-hmm. a thing that you had once somewhere mm-hmm. that you wish you could have again or mm-hmm. you always get it when you go to. Or it could just be like you love pizza.
Three things. Number one, okay? Mm. Our mom makes Mayfair dressing.
Oh, my.
It's called Mayfair dressing. It's an anchovy-based dip dressing that you dip vegetables in and you put it on salads. And it is
great.
The greatest thing in the world. I want a whole quart of it sitting right here.
Great.
And then a bunch of cauliflower to dip in it.
Great.
Okay. Second thing is I had this – oh, shoot. I had it. Glad corn. It is blown out field corn. It's basically the bottom kernels from the popcorn.
It's been changed to popped kerns.
There you go.
I was just on the internet looking it up.
Excuse
they
me.
They had a name change.
Popped kerns.
Excuse me.
Apostrophe D. K-E-R-N.
Popped kerns.
So – those which are like the bottom half popped kernels that you get a whole bag of them. It's incredible.
Great.
So I love that. And then the last thing would be, there is a frozen custard in St. Louis called Ooh. Ted Drew's. Mm-hmm. It would be a Ted Drew's, butterscotch flavored frozen custard with caramel sauce on it with Heath bar mixed in, extra Heath mixed in, and you get that thing piled high. I'm telling you, after a St. Louis Cardinals baseball game, or you take our kids there after you go to St. Louis and visit, it is the greatest frozen custard in the world, bar none.
So
there you go.
Right
those
now.
Three things right
Perfect,
here, and I'm
perfection.
Set.
I'm going to say a hamburger from the Corner Bistro at 3 a.m. in New York City.
So time is of the essence.
It's just, I mean, it is an unbelievable burger.
That like, sounds so good. God, I just got so hungry.
Right? It makes you that kind of hungry. I would say.
The orchetta from Mozza.
What?
The orchetta.
Yeah, the orchetta
from Mozza.
From Mozza, Osteria Mozza here in L.A. And then I will go with a dessert. I thought. For my entire life, for about 35 years of my life, that Ted Drew's frozen custard was the best frozen dessert ever.
Uh-oh.
Until
uh-oh.
I went to Argentina, and there's a little chain, a chain of places mm-hmm. called Fredo. The dulce, am I saying dulce de leche? I'm not sure how I'm saying it. I'm doing it wrong, but it is caramel infused throughout the whole – throughout all of it. It's gelato.
Yum.
Pick something else. Pick like an Emo's pizza.
No, I can't pick anything else.
This is
thing
great.
Is like, this is the thing like I Jones for. That, the one thing I might sub out instead of the Mozza thing is in Ann Arbor, Zingerman's Delicatessen.
Ooh.
They have something called a Georgia Reuben that
okay,
I am
Okay, let's
with.
Swap it out because that's less nearby.
Yeah.
Georgia Reuben. Okay. Moving through these quickly because I know time is of the essence for you guys. Three best friends. Now, it's just like your buddy, somebody from fiction, someone from sports, living or dead, just somebody, three people that you could call up and just be like, God, I'm so lucky I get to call up this person. This person loves me.
Oh, you want that. You want these people
like
to be
these,
your friends.
Yeah,
oh,
like,
all right.
That you wish were.
That you wish were your friends.
Could be Abraham Lincoln. Could be Derek Jeter. Could be.
Oh, God. That's amazing.
Could be Letterman. Could be, you know.
I would say Stan Musial, baseball player for the Cardinals.
I'm going to say Ernest Hemingway.
Great.
I would love to – I took a phenomenal course in college. Hemingway and Fitzgerald was the course. It was basically like we flip-flop back and forth from a guy who worked with and was friends with Hemingway. And it was amazing because I went in thinking like, okay, I am obviously a Fitzgerald fan from The Great Gatsby. And I liked – Hemingway, but I didn't know quite how incredible Hemingway was. By the end of the course, I'm like, not even close.
Amazing.
It's Hemingway.
Stephen Morrissey. I just am like, I'm Great. Fascinated by the Smiths. Fascinated Great. By and just without a doubt love. Who else? Who else would I love? I mean, I heard – see, but it's like you got it. You're clouded by what you know. I mean, I would say Groucho Marx, but I heard he was a douchebag. So, like, I wouldn't even want to go there.
Right. Or this could be the world where you, like,
Don Rickles.
Him by me.
Don Rickles.
Oh, great.
Don Rickles.
Great.
To be friends with him.
Great.
Amazing.
Wow.
Let me switch mine.
Yeah.
I'm gonna switch it from Don Rickles to Mel Brooks.
Oh, period. Great. Period. You know he's a great buddy.
Yep. Yep. Great. That'd be amazing. Great. Just call him and be like, please be our mentor.
Yes.
Absolutely. We kind of look like you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'll stay within that genre, not to be the other half of that team, but I'm going to say Carl Reiner in that mix.
Please,
as well.
Absolutely.
And Karl Marx. And
I'd say Rob Reiner. I feel like all the Reiners.
I met Rob Reiner, and he was wonderful at a Dodgers game. God, he was so cool. Yeah. He was with his son, and he was so sweet.
Yeah, right.
And God, who else? Who else would it be?
Vince Lombardi.
No, it would be like. I mean, I don't want to sound. Tom Brady is someone who went to Michigan, but I can't say him because he's too Republican for my team. Gene Hackman's a good one.
Yeah.
It would be Paul Giamatti. He seems like someone
that's
I want.
Great.
That's a guy you want to just call.
Oh, I love it. You know what?
Like,
I'm going to see that Paul Giamatti. I'm going to raise you a Stanley Tucci.
Ah!
Why is the Tucci not my best friend?
The Tucci is because he's then busy doing a lot of blockbuster movies as the evil guy.
I know.
And meanwhile, that little movie he did, that sort of throwback movie he did with Oliver Platt.
Favorite movie.
Where they played.
The Imposters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
fantastic.
A phenomenal farce battle.
I know. I think about it all the time. No, we did it. You did it.
Good. Okay, good.
Last one. This I just threw in because I thought it would be funny and would make me laugh or not. Three things that you could have a collection of. Didn't you know I have the world's best collection of vintage cars, or I have the world's best collection of you know, signed baseballs or whatever?
Wooden tennis rackets.
Amazing. It doesn't matter how much the stuff takes up because this is an infinite amount of space in MASH.
Handmade tuxedos from China in 1950.
Wow!
Mm-hmm. And Monte Cristo number 2 cigars from Cuba.
Wonderful.
I'm going to say Italian sneakers.
Ooh, love it.
Because they are the best. And insane. And it would just be sweet to have like an endless supply of Golden Goose Italian sneakers.
Hell yeah.
What else? Maybe old cars. Like, I think like old, like, we went to an old car museum when we were shooting United States of America, and like 70s muscle cars mixed in with like not even like the highest end cars.
Just like ones with character.
Character and
something. Corvette Stingray is just about the coolest car you've ever seen.
Yeah, or like whatever Smokey and the Bandit was driving. T-top Trans Am.
T-top Trans Am.
With a CB. Yeah, CB.
CB.
CB radios.
CBs.
What a collection of CB radios. CB radios. Put it down.
High-end stereo equipment.
I got it. Yeah. Okay. Last thing that's going to happen, Savannah, I'll just have you pause it and I'll quickly do like the calculation and we'll see which one of you says it first, or if you say it at the same time, but tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. All right. We can pick this back up. I'm very excited to announce your 100% guaranteed MASH futures.
Okay. Great.
I'm going to go – I might go in order this time. I usually try to build a whole crazy story, but just in the interest of time, I'm going to just
do your thing.
Lay it
do
on
what you got to do.
Okay. First of all, I want to congratulate both of you. Unfortunately, although you have beautiful locales for your vacation homes, they're shacks. That's the nature of MASH, guys.
It's okay.
You just never know.
I get it.
But let me see if I can cheer you up a little bit. Number one – Randy, you are maybe the world's best basketball player.
I love it.
Jason, World Cup level best soccer player.
I love it.
I am so excited about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Your shacks are located in Randy, the Isle of Wight.
I love it.
So it's just a cottage.
Yeah. It's fine with me. Second home.
Jay? Patagonia.
Oh.
You don't need – these are two places where you don't need some
nature
crazy
is your,
mansion.
Nature is your mansion.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nature is my house.
That might be the
remember that song from the 90s? Nature is a mansion. Leave it a mansion. Need to feel it in the air.
Amazing. They both just did a lot of chair dancing.
That was – by the way, that to me was the exact same song as la-da-dee, la-da-da, la-da-dee, la-da-da, la-da-ba-dee.
Okay, I want to also congratulate you on your easy access at any moment, Randy, to your quart of Mayfair dressing.
Oh, thank you.
Your mom.
Always.
And that means, Jay, you ended up with a hamburger from the Corner Bistro.
Ooh, that's good.
At any moment
I'll pour
time,
a little bit of this on there.
I'll
be waiting
to get fat on that.
Maybe you're enjoying these wonderful feelings in your on your taste buds while you are listening to Jay, My Morning Jacket, whenever you want, live in person. Hold steady, Randy.
I love them.
Hold steady.
Absolutely love
Congratulations.
Them.
Congratulations.
Nice.
Need a little bit of break from your reality? Why don't you pop into Dazed and Confused, you son of a gun? You're never going to come out of that.
I will never. I'll see
You'll
you at the
never
Moon Tower.
Come out of that.
See you at the Moon Tower.
Guess what? You work at the news station in Anchorman.
Oh, that's so good.
I mean, Enjoyable. Nothing makes me happier.
Yeah, you'll be like giggling all day long, just like I am when I'm with you guys. I want to congratulate you on your astonishing collection of old cars.
Oh, all right.
Jay, well done.
I'll take it.
Which means that, Randy, you have a lot of handmade tuxedos from China in the 1950s.
They're the greatest things
Wonderful.
In the world. They
so
feel
handsome.
Great. Feel great.
Everyone will like the cut of your jib. That
Thank
goes
you.
Without saying.
My jib is beautifully cut.
I want to finally, two last things, congratulate you for your fantastic friendships, Randy with Mel Brooks. Jay with Paul Giamatti. I see the four of you hanging out without question.
Out, yeah.
I absolutely could. All of those make sense. And then your sweet, whatever it ends up being, your wonderful romantic date, what have you, with one Tina Fey,
yes.
Jay, and with the marvelous Elizabeth Shue.
We can forget about our
Randy.
Kids together.
Yeah,
that's right.
It'll be wonderful.
That's right.
Can't
Take
wait.
A little vacay.
I love it. I thought you were going to ask me who you would be if anybody in history, and there's two people I would be, Elvis Costello or Bjorn Borg.
Interesting. Interesting. I'm going to ponder that answer to the question I didn't ask.
Thank you.
but you guys, thank you so much for doing
Such
the podcast.
A treat. Of course.
And finally, I would like to ask you to sing a snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer because that is how I prefer to end the Boys of Summer podcast.
Oh, wow.
It's okay if you don't really remember.
I don't remember all the lyrics.
Even if you don't remember, just like whatever you remember.
Out on the road today, I saw a dead head sticker on a Cadillac. There was a voice inside my head said, don't look back. You can never look back. Then I knew what love was. What did I know? These days are gone forever. I better just let them go. But I can't see.
Said stop.
That's great. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.